The Mac Observer's Mac Geek App, episode 686. Wait, sorry. No, that's episode 686. Got it backwards. For Monday, December 4th, 2017.
Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in your questions, tips, and cool stuff found, the goal being that we share all that in order to learn at least four new things each. They can be the same thing. Like, I could learn something and you could learn the same thing, and that is okay. We each can count that as one. It can be shared. But we have to learn four distinctly new things at least each and every time we get together. Sponsors for this episode include Smile, where at textexpander.com/podcast, yes, that's not me screwing up and reading some boilerplate, that's actually the URL, you can get 20% off of your Text Expander subscription for the first year. Casper, where at casper.com/MGG, coupon code MGG gets you $50 towards any mattress purchase. Plex, we're at plex.tv/MacGeek. You can get your first month of Plex Pass for free, but you can also just use Plex and most of its features entirely for free forever. So you got to check that out, plex.tv/MacGeek. And Harry's at harrys.com/MGG, where coupon code MGG saves you $5 off of your purchase, including some of their really great limited edition holiday shave kits. So we'll talk more about the details of all of that in a few minutes here in Durham, New Hampshire. I'm Dave Hamilton.
Here in Fairfield, Connecticut, John F. Braun.
And here in Durham, New Hampshire, Pilot Pete. Thanks again for having me back, guys.
Hey, it's good to have you back, man.
It's nice being here.
Yeah.
How about that Patriots game yesterday?
Pete, we are recording this early. We don't know what happened to the Patriots game.
Oh.
This whole time shifting thing.
Darn, I was hoping to get it so I could make my bets this afternoon.
Well, hey, how about those OS updates?
Yeah.
That was awesome. It was so awesome. They released not one but two patches.
Yeah. So that thing that so here here's there's probably several things to talk about with this, but if it is now December 4th, at least that you're hearing this, unless you're in the chat room at MacGeekGab.com/stream, in which case you get the sneak peek. But as of December 2nd, iOS versions, iOS 11 versions prior to 11.2 have a bug that when local notifications try to happen on or after December 2nd, your phone will reset. Springboard is the app that's resetting. Springboard is essentially your home screen on your iPhone. If you get into that loop, you more than likely are going to have to go in and turn off notifications for each app individually before you can successfully update your phone to iOS 11.2. If you aren't having that problem yet, you don't have to stop listening unless you're listening on your iPhone, in which case you will stop listening. But really, right now, do this update. I am not always a proponent of update your phone on the day an iOS update comes out, because, you know, sometimes there's problems with them. Well, in this case, you're going to save yourself potentially a world of hurt of just a rebooting phone. And of course, then that'll kill your battery, but it also makes your phone a whole lot less functional. Just to make it clear, I glossed over this describing it, but this only affects apps that are going to deliver what we call local notifications. Now, as a user of the phone, you don't necessarily know whether you're getting a local notification or a push notification. A push notification comes from some cloud server like our Mac Geek Gab app. That's a push notification because we are going via the cloud, sending a note to your app that then displays the notification. So that's push. It's from outside of the phone. No bugs with that. Local notifications are when an app on your phone sets a notification to happen in the future or immediately. It can do both. And it is entirely the notification is being generated locally. That's where the bug is. And local notifications can come from things that are doing work for you and then displaying a notification. Like, let's say Downcast, right? Downcast will send you notifications when a new podcast episode is downloaded. But that's not happening from a push server in the cloud. That's happening locally from your phone where it says, hey, I did something in the background, assuming you've given it background permission, which it would get by default anyway. And once it downloads it, it's saying, hey, I'm going to push up a notification to your lock screen or your home screen, wherever you happen to be, saying I've downloaded a new episode of, you know, whatever podcast like Mac Geek App. That's a local notification. The deliveries app on its own, it goes in the background. It's a great app, by the way. Goes out, checks your, you know, your UPS and FedEx and USPS deliveries, whatever you want to put in there. And then when there's an update, it sends a push notification or it sends a local notification. That's an example of those. Those are the ones that are having problems. Apps that do like alarm clock type apps that aren't Apple's alarm clock app, but a third party alarm clock app. The way those function is by setting a future local notification that, hey, guess what? Sounds an alarm. That's how they do it. So you want to update your phone to iOS 11.2. That's my feeling on it, John.
And what's the date on it, Dave? Is after December 4th?
After December 2nd. It's already happening.
It's already happening.
Yeah.
So when did they, or I'm just kind of curious how they found out about it. I mean, obviously, you know, people are testing these sorts of things all the time, but
that's
kind of a, that's kind of an unusual, you know, that it triggers on a date.
After, I know.
You know,
I would love to see the
color. Not being a hardcore programmer myself, but yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about this, John?
I think I'm going to look forward to Apple Pay Cash, which is
that's
a feature of this update.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Anything to add to the bug thing before we?
No,
So send money to John.
Yeah.
No, I avoided it. I installed the update as soon as
you did. Okay.
It was out. So I didn't experience any crashiness.
Right. And that's not so much what I was asking. I'm really asking, you know, any thoughts on what others should do in this scenario. Do you agree with the advice, update right away, no matter what?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Apple Pay Cash is a feature of this update, but it is not active, at least as of the time we're recording this show. It may be active. They say it's going to be active on Monday, December 4th at some point. So you may already have it on your phone if you've got 11.2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The nice thing is they already have an article telling me how to use it. Oh, I'm going to have to do something different.
What do you have to do different?
If you're setting up Apple Pay Cash for the first time, you'll need to set it up using any supported device. Where did it say? Now, there was something here saying you have to enable two-factor authentication.
I would imagine you would need two-factor authentication. Yeah. Have you not enabled two-factor authentication for yours, John?
Not really.
So I have a piece of advice.
I guess I'll have to if I want to throw money around.
Yeah. In terms of two-factor authentication on your phone or on your Apple ID, which is everywhere, I really feel like you're going to have to do that eventually. Apple's really pushing it.
It pesters me. Any device that I set up now, whether it be a Mac or an iOS device, it's like, yeah, you want to do this, right? And I'm like, well, maybe later.
Maybe later.
Yeah. They're forcing my hand, I guess, if I want to play with this new toy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It is one piece of advice I'll give. The where it gets difficult is if you're running something like BusyCal that needs an app-specific password, it can be sort of a pain because it shows you the password. You're supposed to copy that, paste it into whatever app needs the app specific password. These app specific passwords are for non Apple apps that need to access your Apple ID. Apple has not created like an OAuth type authentication where they can authorize third party apps. So the workaround is them providing you with the ability to create what they call an app specific password. It's just a different password that authenticates to your same Apple ID. It's actually a major security hole because it effectively takes your two-factor authentication and makes it go away. Their user experience with it is that you're supposed to copy it, paste it into the app, and then never see it or save it anywhere. I find that to be a remarkable pain in the neck because if I have three computers running BusyCal, I have to on each of them go to my Apple ID page in Safari, generate a thing, paste it in. So what I do, and again, this defeats the purpose of two-factor authentication, is when I create my BusyCal password, I put that into a field for my Apple ID in 1Password. And then when I go to the next computer, I just copy it out of there and paste it in. I self-police in terms that I do it on a per-app basis. So I will use the same password for BusyCal on all my devices, but only BusyCal. And then if I need another app with an app-specific password, I will plug that in. So I can easily go and expire. If I have an app that's misbehaving on, and let's say I've got it on 3 computers, I can go and expire that password for that app, and boom, it cuts that app off without screwing me up with BusyCal. So you could create one app-specific password and use it for everything. There's nothing stopping you from doing that. But, you know, being a little more cautious about it, just in case you have an app that runs rogue. There you go. So that's my thoughts on it. And speaking of passwords, that'll make life easier for you, John. Yeah.
Speaking of passwords, I noticed the new feature of iOS 11. So I was at the families recently. We're doing family stuff.
Yeah.
And I brought so I got my iPad repaired.
Sure.
And
that's good.
Restored from iCloud and everything's great.
Yeah.
So then I was there, and normally I put my, their access point is, you know, in my iCloud keychain. But it was funny because my iPhone was logged in. I wasn't using my Mac, but my iPad wasn't. And I'm like, well, that's weird. And all of a sudden, and this is the coolest thing. So I brought my iPhone near my iPad, and as if it knew my intent, the iPhone said, "Hey, you want me to share the password for the network that I'm on with this iPad that I see next to me?" I'm like, dude,
yeah,
that is so cool. The thing is, I had not activated iCloud Keychain on the iPad. It was off. So I think that's why this came up.
Oh, otherwise it would have had it synced already. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm like, why are you asking me this? Shouldn't you just do this automatically? And then the fact that it does this was just, I mean, it was almost like magic, seriously. It's like, well, I was going to do this anyways, but if you're offering to share it, thanks.
Yeah, it will do that. It's not just your own devices. It will do that with anyone that's within range. I think it's using Bluetooth to do that. So
that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed it with my dad's iPhone. He was in a, he built a house, and they were in temporary housing for a little while between when they sold their first one and or their old one and moved into the new one. And so, you know, they had to set up a Wi-Fi network there and all that stuff. And we went through the same thing. And once I had it on mine, he went to connect on his, and I got a little notification on mine saying, "Hey, you know, do you want to authenticate this?" But it was only because my phone was awake. I think that's how that works. That's how I've experienced it, that, you know, whatever device is awake, it'll say, "Hey, do you want to share this password with, you know, that person that's in the room with you?" Say, "Yeah."
I can see chaos at the airport. Just saying.
Yeah. I wonder. Well, that's what I wonder about this, right? Yeah. Is this only for people that are in your family group? Because my dad is in my family. Okay. You know, right. Yeah. It could be that. I don't know. But yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
I want to see what it does when you get near Logan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
317 people are nearby. Would you like to share the password?
You know, we used to be on a 15 gig a month shared family plan with AT&T, and we would dance like up near it. We'd always go past 75%, but, you know, never did we hit the 15. It was the perfect number for us. And for whatever reason, in the last 2 months, we've had events on individual people's phones. There's 6 of us on the plan. There's the 4 of us here and then my dad and his wife. And, you know, 1 month it was my stepmom's phone that was, you know, I think it was when they were transitioning to this temporary house where maybe she wasn't on Wi-Fi for a couple of days at home. And all of a sudden she had used 3 gigs when in a month she generally only uses 1. And then when we went to Texas, Lisa, and so we made it to the end of the month, but we all had to like really like, you know, scrimp and save on the data usage. And then we were like, okay, great. We made it. Great. And we left, went to Texas, and Lisa and I had told our phones to download a bunch of songs, but we did it when we were on Wi-Fi. No, the next morning, like we'd each use 4 gigs, and I'm like, okay, man. I can't live like this anymore. I'm saving $30 a month not being on an AT&T unlimited plan. This kind of stress I can't have in my life. So at breakfast the next morning in Texas, I flipped us up to an unlimited plan. Yeah.
They're thinking of those plans. They've actually got another one that's pretty cool for international travel. It's essentially for $10 a day. It's as if you're in the States.
That's right.
Same amount of data, text, and voice.
$10 per device per day.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So it works out great if you're there for a couple of days or traveling solo.
Right.
Traveling with a family, you're still better off buying SIM cards. Oh,
absolutely. Yeah. But I was just thinking as far as, you know, it used to be for me, you know, I'd have to drop $50 to get 15 megabytes or some, you know, really low number.
Right. And, no, the convenience of not having to change your phone number when you're traveling for $10 a day. Yep. Yeah. It's pretty good. And we're hearing from people around the world, Graham in Australia says that Vitaphone does it for $5 a day, which is even better. Yeah. Right.
The price on that stuff is all coming down.
T-Mobile does it for free in most countries, I think.
Really?
Yeah. Nice. I really considered moving to T-Mobile, but
they just have horrible coverage in this area.
Here,
that's the problem.
It's just part of here. Yeah. That's exactly. But if I was anywhere else, I think I'd very quickly move to T-Mobile. So, yes. All right. Hey, you know, while we're here, we do have some sponsors to talk about. So before we get in to Cool Stuff Found, I would love to take a minute and talk about our first two sponsors, if that's okay with everybody.
I guess.
Yeah.
All right. In this sponsor block, we've got two sponsors that you can order things from and actually get in touch. The first is Casper. Casper.com/MGG is where you're going to go to get a mattress that is perfectly designed for humans, engineered to soothe and cradle your natural geometry. I mean, it's Mac Geek Gab. Geometry, you, your bed. You know, you spend one third of your life sleeping. You should be comfortable. And Casper mattresses provide all the support the human body needs in all the right places, combining multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with the right amounts of both sink and bounce. These things are designed, developed, and assembled right here in the U.S. And with over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars across Casper, Amazon, and Google, Casper is becoming the internet's favorite mattress. It's certainly become my favorite mattress, and it can become yours. They've got three mattress models, the original, the Wave, and the Essential. But they're not just a mattress company. They offer a wide array of different products to make your sleep better. You can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep on it trial, right? You get to try it. Where better to try out a mattress than literally in your home while you're sleeping? Go to a big box store, you're trying out a mattress in your clothes while you're not sleeping at a time of day that you probably don't usually sleep. These things are so comfortable. It's amazing. I've slept on them in some Airbnbs too. And I noticed, like, after a few days, like, what's going on? Why am I sleeping so well? I'm in an Airbnb. I look at the mattress. Oh, it's Casper, just like I have at home. You got to try one of these out. So what you do is to start sleeping ahead of the curve with Casper and get $50 towards any mattress purchase. Visit Casper.com/MGG. Use our code, which is also MGG. It'll say it right at the top of the screen, though. You don't have to remember, although you're going to remember because it's MGG. Do that at checkout. You get $50 towards any mattress purchase there. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that's Casper.com/MGG. Using MGG as your coupon code, you get $50 towards your mattress. You get free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada. You get their 100-night risk-free sleep on it trial. Our thanks to Casper for sponsoring this episode. Our second sponsor of things that you can order and actually get and hold in your hands is Harry's. We're at harrys.com/MGG. They'll tell you to use coupon code MGG to give you $5 off your order. And this offer is only available for the holidays. What better gift to give than a nice shave set to your favorite guy, right? I mean, this is, and you can give it to your favorite guy, can be yourself. I've put gifts under the tree for me every year. Harry's was one of them one year. because it like it's delicious to shave with this. But it doesn't have to just be for you. You can get it for anybody you like. You're going to get a gift set from Harry's. You get to pick a color that's right. And they've got limited edition holiday colors. You've got a personal engraving option if you want. There's that person on your list that's impossible to shop for. Well, Harry's is probably right for him, right? I've been converted back to using blades because of Harry's. I had gotten away from them. It was a mess. It was a waste of money. It was never enjoyable. I went to electrics for years, and then Harry's came into my life, and I have sworn off the electric. I don't even bring it with me when I travel anymore because Harry's is just so convenient. It's easy to use. It's inexpensive. They know what they are doing. And these gift sets that you can get come with their German engineered 5-blade cartridges that provide a super close, really comfortable, really easy shave. Their foaming shave gel smells amazing, feels amazing. It's so thick and luscious. And like I said, there's those winter edition colors, the special holiday edition colors, winter chrome and emerald green handles. Like I said, you can personalize it with engraving. Gift sets start at just $10. And remember, this holiday, give Harry's and give handsome. Get your holiday shopping done early and take advantage of free shipping. To get a limited edition holiday shave set while supplies last, go to harrys.com/MGG right now. That's harrys.com/MGG. Our thanks to Harry's for sponsoring this episode. All right. I think it's time for some cool stuff found. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I did want to do a roundup of macOS woes, but we'll save that for
later.
I got some fish shakes for them, too.
Well, so here's one that maybe will turn you around, although I don't think you have a phone that can do this yet, but maybe you do. Bruce writes in and points us to something that he says is seriously geeky, but still pretty cool. iFixit has wallpaper for both the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 10 that are X-rays of the phone that you put it on. So you can put wallpaper on your iPhone 8 or iPhone 10 that looks like you're looking at an X-ray of your iPhone 8 or iPhone 10. And to me, I don't know what else actually you could call cool stuff found if you can't call this cool stuff found. So thanks for sending that.
It's
along,
like a
Bruce.
Watch with a clear peg. You can watch it work.
You can watch it work. It's exactly. Yeah, I actually really like that, being a watch geek and all. Yeah.
So I used to have, I wonder if I got it from iFixit, but I used to have a background on one of my Macs that was an X-ray of that specific Mac, because I figured the TSA guys would just. It would just crack them up.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Like, well, what am I seeing?
Right. Yeah. Back in the day when they would make you like turn on your power up your laptop to show them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's good.
The security theater portion of your day has now ended.
Has now ended. Yeah. No, it's only just begun, Pete. Right. You know that better than any
yes,
of
I
us.
Do.
All right. We'll move on before we get Pete in trouble.
Yeah.
Moving on to Ray. Which, if I alphabetized these things, would come across way better. Ray says, I'm an iOS developer and have been a fan of Mac Geek Gab for many years. I recently launched a new document scanner app named PowerLogic focused on automation with workflows and rules. The app supports triggering rules based on content within scans, similar to the way one might use Hazel on a Mac. For example, the app can be used to automatically organize and archive receipts based upon their content. And obviously he sent us a link to the app that he wrote. Ray, this is like my favorite kind of cool stuff found, because it's just staying within the family here. So we will most certainly put a link to that in the show notes, my friend. Yeah. And I love this, right? Because I mean, we've all used document scanners on iOS. And if you haven't, then you're missing out, because it's like the most magical thing in the world. But then you get it and you've got to, you know, once the scan's done, then you got to do something with it. Well, with Ray, you don't have to. So nice job, Ray. Thanks for telling us about it, man. Very cool stuff. Don't you think, John? It's good, right?
I think sometimes, yes.
You think sometimes, yes. All right. Speaking of the iPhone X, I have been, you know, testing out a couple of cases, and I don't talk about every case I test because, we would just become the case show. But, I have been using one from Catalyst called the Impact Protection Case. It's a thicker case around the edge, but it's not too thick. It's got a clear back, so you can see the beautiful back of your iPhone X, and it's got this cool. And probably the reason that I'm mentioning it here for the volume mute button, every case has to come up with a way of dealing with that. And this one, I'm showing it to Pete here. It's actually a little knob that you turn, and the knob, it's smart on the inside. It's just got a wide notch. So when you turn it one way, the notch grabs, you know, the bottom of the thing and moves it down. When you turn it the other way, it grabs the top and moves it up. Yeah, it's perfect. And it really well done. And here you can play with the notch on that. And it's very satisfying. You get
it's
the click.
Tactile. Yeah.
It's tactile. Yeah, exactly. So
beautiful.
Yeah. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes. And it's, you know, they've got their drop protection and everything that Catalyst always does makes life good. 9.9 feet. They call it 3 meters of drop protection. So,
and what's the contactless charging?
Yeah, for wireless.
So it's got
charging.
The clear back for the wireless charging.
Yep.
Is that a requirement, or is it just a certain thickness, or is there what's?
It's a it's a thickness thing. Okay. You don't have to have a clear back. Okay. It's not. A visual thing.
That didn't come out right, but
there is a distance, a maximum distance that you can have between the two charging coils.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this,
and then obviously something metal or leather is
metal,
be less
correct.
Conducive.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like clear cases.
Yeah, I do too. This one's colored around the kind of, it looks like a bumper case is what it looks like. So yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah. The one that Spec hooked me up with a couple, and they do have one called the Presidio Clear iPhone 7 case. And I kind of like being able to see the phone.
Yeah.
The case.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Apple makes nice looking phones. So, yeah, for sure. I've played with two TP-Link things. One that actually they sent me to play with, and one that I bought in their Casa series, KASA. Now, these are smart home devices. They don't work with the S word that is part of our Apple devices, but it does work with the A word and the G word with your Amazon and Google stuff. So the first is the Casa Cam. So it's actually a really easy to use internet, you know, Wi-Fi camera. It's got a low light mode that's freaking amazing. And you can check it from your phone, you know, anywhere. Really, really cool stuff. And I've been impressed with it. It's got a magnetic base, too, that makes it really easy to stick on things. If you've got it, like, you know, I mean, you could put it on the side of your fridge if you so desire. But you could also put it anywhere else. So that one, you know, and it's got the whole customizing of activity zones and all that stuff. So I've been impressed with it, especially the optics. It's a 1080p camera, 130 degree range. Good stuff. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes. And then the other thing that I actually wound up buying on Black Friday, they had a deal. I bought a TP-Link HS100, which is one of their Wi-Fi smart plugs. You know, I know I'm late to this particular part of the party, but every year I have used like the really old, I think it's the Insteon, the original like 10-year-old smart home thing that you had the USB to your computer, and it basically used power line to send the signal to the plug somewhere else, a remote plug or whatever. A Wi-Fi smart plug changes that entirely. And that is what I should have done years ago. Just throw away all this other stuff and go with the future. Because it's been great. So we've got our lawn ornaments for the holidays here. We put a couple of Santas up, inflatable Santas that run all day. And then of course our lasers that run against the house so that I don't have to climb up on the house with a ladder to put lights up because I'm chicken of that. So the lasers shine at the house and the trees and stuff, and it actually looks really cool.
You are near an airport, by the way.
What's that? I am more than 10 miles away from an airport, Pete. I checked that. I'm barely more than 10 miles away, but yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I did think about that. Yeah. Yeah, as I
aim another one worth
aim my lasers to the sky. but yeah, these things are great because you can set them and you can set schedules, but you can also just trigger them with, you know, the app or whatever. So yeah, John.
So I jumped on that bandwagon, believe it or not, a while ago. Someone gifted me a Wemo Switch smart plug, which pretty much does what you'd think. There's one plug, and it's got a power button, so you can manually turn it on. And
oh, that's nice, yeah.
And then it integrates with the A Word, and I have it tied to my table lamp in my bedroom. So I walk in, and I'm like, turn on the table lamp or turn off the table lamp, rather than going through the effort of actually, you know, hitting the switch on it.
Right.
I was actually looking for something in my house to do with it, but that's really happy with it. Integrates fine with my system.
Yeah, and that won't work with Apple's S Word. It's only A Word and G Word, right? I'm pretty sure. I'm looking at it now. Yeah.
I don't have anything that Let's works try with it. Apple's environment.
Hey. Yeah. So
no, I got in the game too early. I know a lot of people on our staff have things that work with the H Word, but I don't think this is one of them.
What's the H Word, John? Do you mean the S Word?
Oh no. Well, I can say the H Word. HomeKit.
Oh yeah, no. Okay. Right. Yeah. You can say HomeKit. Right. That doesn't have to be H Word. I thought we had a whole other one. I thought I missed one. It's funny we never talk about the C word. Let's move on to Joe here, who has two things in his cool stuff found. He said, I can't imagine it gets much easier than this to set up your own isolated VPN on a virtual private server with its own discrete IP address, no less. It's called Private Packets at privatepackets.io. And what it's built to do is it's sort of an automated way to set up your own VPN server on a cloud server. So, and they've kind of figured out, they've built a script essentially is what they've done that sets up all of this VPN stuff on a DigitalOcean server account. And you pay DigitalOcean $5 a month, but Private Packets has a $10 credit. So you get 2 months for free. I would assume that's kind of how I'm thinking about this. It's very, very cool. So privatepackets.io, if you want to set up your own VPN server to use from anywhere, it's, you know, it's set up outside of your house. You don't have to worry about your internet connection speed or anything like that. You just go ahead and do it. And of course you could connect to it from your house too, if you want. And DigitalOcean's got servers kind of all over the world, so you can pick your endpoints too. So you got to check it out, privatepackets.io. So there's that. So thanks for that, Joe. And then he reminds us again, he says, Dave, have you ever looked at or used the router OS router board units from MikroTik? He said it's kind of a European version of Ubiquiti with a pretty industrial feature set for a competitive price. Yes, we have talked about it here. I've never used any of that stuff, but quite a few of our listeners, and especially our consultant listeners from Europe, especially the UK, have very much recommended MikroTik many, many times over. So yeah, we gotta get on that because it seems like a cool thing. That it's the professional but also prosumer level routers where you can get, you know, your hands dirty if you want. That's fun. One last one on the cool stuff found list here, John, from Stefan, who writes in show 674. Way to go. There was mention of the website shellcheck.net. We inadvertently called it spellcheck.net. I think we set it. We put it in the show notes as spellcheck.net, which we since fixed. But shellcheck.net, where you can paste your shell script and have it checked for errors. He says, for people like me who are not comfortable pasting possibly classified information into some website, there is another way. Shell check. I can say it. I swear I can say it right.
Seashells, seashells.
Yeah, easy for you to say. Shell Check is just another utility that you can install on your command line through Homebrew and then use without needing an internet connection. Hence, it can also be integrated into a development environment. And he says, I use Code Runner from Code Runner app to develop and test all my scripts. Besides including support for various programming languages out of the box, it lets you add support for additional languages. So he says, I added Shell Check as a new language. And essentially the way Shell Check works from the command line is you build a text file with your script in it, and then you point Shell Check at that file. So you just say Shell Check, you know, file name dot text or whatever, and then it will do its magic and tell you its results. And that's how he did it inside of his Code Runner environment too. So really that's two cool stuffs found there, because you get Shell Check and Shell Check from the terminal and Code Runner. So it's pretty cool. Have you used Shell Check yet, John?
Don't need to.
You don't need to. What?
No, I never make errors.
Oh, all right. Of course.
100% accuracy.
What were you thinking?
You know, I know I've talked about it before, but the fish shell, F-I-S-H, has become my favorite shell to use on all my Macs. If you're a terminal user, the fish shell is great. It's got really intelligent completion and history and all of that stuff. It's just really, really smooth. And you can install it with Homebrew. I'll put a link to kind of the Fish Shell project page in general in the show notes. But it's pretty awesome. So I like it. I have it on all my Macs. It's good stuff. All right, John. Shall we, you know, while we're here and we've been talking about some of this stuff, why don't we jump to one that we've been holding for many weeks? Why don't we jump to Andrew, John? That sound good? You want to take us to Andrew?
I'm not going to jump.
Okay.
I'll take us to Andrew once I can bring up. Where is
you want me to? I'll share. I'll share David's tip.
Here we go.
You sure? I can share. I'll do David's tip. I got it up, and then we'll do Andrew. David was having a problem, and it was a very interesting problem because he said that he had the ability to both, or it wasn't an ability, he was forced to be backing up his photos to iCloud while he was also on iCloud Photo Library. Now, those two things should be mutually exclusive. Once you turn on iCloud Photo Library on your phone, it, for me, and for the way it's supposed to work for most people, is it removes the photos line from your backup options because it's already backing them up to iCloud through iCloud Photo Library. With David, that was not the case. And we went back and forth and back and forth. And I kept saying, no, like, man, this is like, it's not, this is not expected behavior. So there's some bug, there's some problem. And if we can work around it for you, then you're going to be in bliss. You don't have to abandon ship. You don't have to go to Google Photos. Like, we can get you there. And so he wound up calling Apple support, and they fixed it with him. But they had some steps to do this that were very interesting to me, and I wanted to make sure we shared. He said, on all Mac OS and iOS devices that have iCloud Photo Library and with the iPhone, photo backups turned on, turn off iCloud Photo Library and then wait 24 hours, then turn off photos for backup and wait, 24 hours. And then after the use, so this is a 48 hour process, right? Turn off iCloud Photo Library, wait 24 hours, then turn off photos for backup, wait another 24 hours, then turn both back on and leave and wait for everything to sync, and boom. He says, now all my devices seem to be working as expected and properly managing the content. So it what Apple was telling him that was that there's settings for this in iCloud that can get confused, and they resync themselves every 24 hours. Very interesting. I never would have thought, I probably would have gone through exactly these steps. Turn it all off, turn it back on. Probably wouldn't have fixed it. knowing to wait that 24 hours per is sort of the key here. So thanks for sharing that, David. That's crazy, but it's a good tip. So thank you. All right, John, you ready to take us to Andrew?
I am ready.
Sweet.
Andrew asks, is there a Files app for Mac? For some reason, I thought there should have been one, since there is one for iOS. At first, I was going to get snarky, but then I reined in the snark.
Okay.
So one could say that on the Mac, the Finder is your Files app.
That's right? Kind of how I think of it. Yeah.
Well, but then I thought, then I wanted to think differently. Somebody else used that phrase once.
Yeah, that's right.
Obscure reference.
Yeah. So one could say it's already there, but then I think the question goes a little deeper, because what does Files on iOS do? Well, it kind of lets you bridge the local file system, which you weren't able to do easily, with various cloud services, right?
Right.
But, I mean, that's what I get out of Files.
But I can do that in the Finder, too.
I can
have Dropbox and CloudStation and Box.
I agree, but there are enhancements that you can make to that. So that's how I took this question. I'm just going to mention three products that I use on and off.
Okay.
That you may want to explore to give you more functionality. So the first one that I've used, Dave, it's something called Expand Drive. And they advertise it as a network drive for the cloud. And you can mount Amazon, Google, Dropbox, Box, OneDrive, SFTP, WebDev, S3, on your Mac. So that may be one thing to check out. And it's both for Mac and Windows, if you happen to be one of those Windows people. So that's one. Another one, and then there are some that include encryption of some sort of your cloud contents, which I think is interesting.
Okay.
Let me see. The other one that I saw here, the second one is something called Boxcryptor.
Oh, yeah. We've talked about it. Yeah. We've talked about both of these things. I mean, it's worth bringing them back up. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's similar, you know, does Dropbox, does Google Drive, does OneDrive, Box, and many more.
Yeah.
Say, I'm not going to read you the whole list here.
Right.
But it also offers an encryption feature. So I think that's kind of nice, too. And then the last one that some guy out of the blue just emailed me saying, hey, check this one out. And I'm like, okay, sure. It's called Cloud Mounter.
I've never heard of that.
Their tagline is free disk space. Yeah, it's the new kid on the block.
Okay.
But they say Cloud Mounter is a must-have tool for laptop users with low-capacity SSD drives, and that you can easily mount your Dropbox, Google Drive, other cloud disks without having to download the files.
Oh, that's interesting. So it essentially starts you in a selective sync mode with nothing synced, but you can still see all the contents.
That seems to be the case.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's more like Files for iOS. You're right, because when you're that's a great distinction, because when you're saving something on iOS to the Files app, it is not saving it locally, at least not in a persistent way. I'm sure it's stored temporarily locally while it syncs up or whatever, but it's not taking up space long term on your iOS device. You're saving it effectively straight to the cloud. Whereas on your Mac, when you save to Dropbox, you are saving to the local copy of your Dropbox that then happens to be synced, but the local version remains. Yeah, I hadn't thought about the Files app that way. Yeah, that's good, man. I like this cloud mounter thing. Yeah,
I did. Now, the weird thing, Dave, is that I do not see. I think there should be, or maybe not, an on my Mac category on my iOS device when you run Files. I don't see that because I don't think any app has stored something locally on my phone in quite a while. I'll have to check my iPad also.
Well, you wouldn't see an on my Mac category, but you would see.
Or local.
On my iPhone when I launch Files, I see it. But you might have it turned off if you go into the Files app. You have to, if you go to the upper right hand corner and hit the edit button, you will see the ability to turn on and off all of those services. And quote unquote on my iPhone is one of those services that you can disable. And from this screen, you can also reorder them so that you can put the ones that obviously matter most to you.
I don't see that. So when under locations?
No. Well, I mean, yes and no. And if you're on that screen where you can see locations and then below that favorites and tags, in the upper right hand corner is an edit button.
And I hit that, and then, so I get a, so I see, no, I don't see on my iPhone. I see iCloud Drive, DS Cloud, DS File, OneDrive, SanDisk Connect. That's interesting.
Sure, well, these are all your
Dropbox
apps, right?
And Google Drive.
Huh.
So these are the only things that are advertising.
Isn't that interesting?
Their presence to,
I wonder what,
I don't see the category.
The, let's see, files, iOS 11 on my iPhone. Let's do a quick quick search, because there's something there. It should be there. Or maybe, I don't know why it wouldn't be there. Huh.
I'll fiddle with it.
Yeah, I mean, you've got, do you see it on yours, Pete?
I'll
go on your iPhone, launch the files app. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm just, that's interesting. We'll have to dig into that. If anybody knows, feedback at MacGeekGab.com. That's the,
Did I hear you right, Dave, with this new codec and all that? I think you said feedback at MacGeekGab.com.
I did. I said feedback at MacGeekGab.com, and we are using Discord again. You know, of all the topics that we got email about this week, the sound changes that we made, what I thought was temporarily last week, but clearly is not, were like far and away 10 to 1 emails about that versus, you know, all the other content of the show. So thank you for that. And I'm glad that the new changes that we made, I mean, by and large, in fact, I don't think there were any negative comments. There were some nitpicks, which is really great. But everybody seemed to, in general, you know, like the sound better. And I agree. It's a better codec. We had some weird issues when we talked at the same time that John's sound would flange out a little bit. But I think we found some settings in Discord to deal with that, too. So let us know what you think again.
There you go.
Premium at MacGeekGab.com is where you would send your email if you're a premium listener. We prioritize those because that's how we go. All right.
And I actually have one more that's kind of a weak sister of those. I think maybe, but I use it still religiously, which is Forklift.
Okay.
As a files app, because it not only is it a kind of a replacement for Finder, but it's an excellent FTP.
And this is on your Mac?
On the Mac.
Yeah, okay.
And for instance, I no longer use like CyberDuck and some of the other FTP programs. I just drag and drop it from one side of Forklift to the other, like to my server, my web server.
Yeah.
It maintains a constant connection to that. So it's slightly different than the others, but it also does the drop drive and Amazon and
right. It's not just FTP.
Yeah. So I found Forklift to be really versatile along those lines.
Huh.
Binary Night study.
I think they might have removed Dropbox support from what I'm seeing here.
Interesting.
Yeah. But they do have, you're right, S3, Google Drive, FTP, SFTP, WebDAV, any of your local file servers. Yeah. Huh. Cool.
I guess Dropbox only in so much as that it appears on your hard drive. Oh. Or, you know, on your hard drive anyway. You can look at that.
Right. You know. Right. Oh, yeah. There's no. Right. It's already there.
Yeah.
Right. That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. Cool. All right, John, while we're on this one, speaking of iOS and tools that are inconsistently available between Mac and iOS, why don't you take us to Sam?
Yeah, well, this changed since I last looked at it.
Okay.
Hi, guys. Have either one of you ever tried this app? Lemonjar.com/iOS console. Yes, we have. I think our friend Allison actually let us know about it.
Okay.
And the thing is, yes, I've tried it, and at least under High Sierra, doesn't work.
Oh.
It launches, but I see nothing.
Okay.
So yeah, it was a handy little tool. Not anymore. Now, here's the thing, though, is that I'm going to be Sam's going to turn me into a liar because I don't see what I saw before, Dave. So, yes, of course, we mentioned that. And I said in my reply, I see her on iOS 11 and the version that claims to be next sentence. OK. On the other hand, running console on its own, Dave, at least the last time I tried it, shows that both my cabled iPhone 7 as well as my Wi-Fi connected iPad are both shown as items to log when running the stock console app.
Yeah.
The thing is, I just looked and I don't see them anymore. I don't know if OS update broke it or I have to
You have to reinstall Xcode? I feel like
maybe I got to upgrade it.
That might be related to these going away for you, because I'm still able to do that and I can see the logs on my High Sierra machine, or at least I could as of, you know, a week or two ago. I'm not on High Sierra in the studio yet because I need this machine to be reliable and I always just wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
so I don't know if I got to cable them or re-enable.
You might need to.
No, I got Wi-Fi. Last I checked, I have Wi-Fi syncing on, but I don't see it show up in iTunes either.
Oh, then you might need to go through the whole, you know, authorize this computer to talk to this phone, you know, key bag thing, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the good news is you should be able to see your devices, though you may have to cable them in console.
Yeah.
So that's a nice surprise.
Console's weird in Sierra and High Sierra. It's become more of a developer tool than a troubleshooting tool.
Yeah, how dare they?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just difficult sometimes to troubleshoot with it unless it's...
Well, yeah. Oh, you know. This is... something to mention here, Dave. Remember there is this app that let you kind of digest console output? Constellation?
Oh, Constellation. Yeah.
Yeah, remember that? Well, hey, guess what? It's new. Constellation 2.
Really?
So, yeah. No, I was goofing around I was searching and I'm like, oh, look, Constellation 2. I don't know if the app let me know that there's a new version of it, but there's a new version of it.
Look at that. Constellation 2.4. It's from the Eclectic Light Company, and it's hard to find a link for this, but Constellation is really, you can do a lot of different things with it. It's mainly built to surface logs of your Time Machine backups, which previously were pretty easy to get out of console prior to Sierra were easy to get out of console.
Yeah, I mean, you search for backup D and
it's done. It's right there. That's not the case with High Sierra. So Constellation is your consolation prize. So we'll put a link there to the Eclectic Light Company's page talking about Constellation 2. That's good stuff.
I like that.
Yeah, same. All right. I want to take a minute and talk about our software set of sponsors, if that's okay, Mr. Braun.
Mm-hmm.
In this sponsor block, I got software for you that you can download and use right away. The first is Plex. We're at plex.tv/MacGeek. You get all your movies, TV shows, music, and photos on any device, anywhere for free. Plus, you can upgrade to a Plex Pass and your first month free with coupon code MGG. Again, this is free to download, register, and use. You can stream and share all your personal media to any device from your Plex Media server, photos, music, movies, even DVR TV. You get personalized news presented beautifully and seamlessly right alongside all your own media. They've got almost 200 global publisher partners and growing. That includes CNN, CBS, Financial Times, Euronews, and top local news sources for over 80% of the markets in the U.S. You can organize all your personal media in the awesome interface. We use Plex at home all the time. Here's the thing. We run one Plex server, right? I happen to run it on my disk station. You could run it on your Mac. You can also run in Plex Cloud. If you don't want to have to run your own server locally, you can do that. But then we can access it with our iPhones, our iPads. There's an Apple TV app for Plex. There's a Roku app for Plex. There's a TiVo app for Plex. It's built into your TiVo. You can just use it. This is pretty amazing, and it's so smooth. We do everything in Plex now. It really, is great. And so much of this functionality is available just for free. And then if you want some of the added functionality, like the ability to sync for offline viewing, like while you're on an airplane or whatever, you can download or upgrade rather to Plex Pass. And your first month of that is also free because of coupon code MGG. Visit plex.tv/MacGeek. I know it's a weird URL. It's not our normal URL. So you got to remember that, or you can just visit our show notes, plex.tv/MacGeek. But then remember that coupon code is MGG. Our thanks to Plex for sponsoring this episode. And the second piece of software that you can download is Text Expander. Another thing that I don't go a day without using. Man, so much great stuff with Text Expander. Let's say you get home from a conference, right? Or you're visiting, like I go to these Pepcom events or whatever, and you got a ton of new contacts and you want to follow up with everybody. Well, you could type out an email, or you could use copy and paste to move things around. But here's the problem with copy and pasting, right? Let's say I say, hey, Susan, it was great meeting you. Thanks so much for taking the time to show me all the geeky details of that product. I really appreciate it. Susan, I look forward to working together with you in the future. You know, best regards, Dave. I've mentioned Susan's name twice in there. So if I copy that text and then paste it in to another email, I have to remember to change Susan's name in both places. Otherwise, I have egg on my face. I also have to, change the thank you line. That's, I said, thanks for walking me all the geeky features. Maybe when I go to Tim, he's showing me some of the more, design centric stuff of whatever their product is. So I got to thank Tim for that. And now I'm editing in a weird way. Text Expander snippets lets you customize that, and you can use fill-in fields for things like contact names and a custom topic, and you can blow through repetitive tasks like this in minutes instead of hours. You can share your snippet collection with colleagues. So if you're, replying to a lot of people doing sort of the same thing, visit textexpander.com/podcast. No, that's not me reading too fast from their talking points. That's literally the URL they want you to use. It's textexpander.com/podcast, and you get 20% off your first year. When you go to textexpander.com/podcast, it'll ask you which podcast. We hope that you'll remember this one, but you get 20% off at that URL, textexpander.com/podcast. Our thanks to Smile and Text Expander for sponsoring this episode. All right, John. Well, I think it's time to answer some questions. What do you think?
Why not?
Okay. Bill, we opened the show talking about iOS notifications in sort of a not so great light. But Bill says, here's a little thing that's been bugging me for a long time. My iPad shows mail notifications on the lock screen for all mailboxes, while my iPhone shows them only for inboxes. I use server-side rules to put emails into folders before they ever go to my devices. For example, all emails from banks skip the inbox and go to a finance folder. On the iPad, I get a notification on the lock screen that the email came in to my finance folder. On the iPhone, I get no such notification until I unlock the phone, and sometimes not until I open mail on the phone. I have searched high and low for some difference in the settings that might have made that I might have made on the iPad and not the iPhone, but I can't find anything. The issue has persisted over several different devices through the years. So am I crazy, or is this just the way that iOS notifications have been implemented differently on iPhone and iPad? I don't have a magic answer for this. I have a couple of things to test. Now, there are two places to go for notifications. Settings, notifications, mail. And you've got a lot of options in there when it comes to mail. It's one of the more granular things available in iOS in terms of notifications. When you go into settings, notifications, mail, you get different settings available for each of your mailboxes. You just dig in, but then below those and with your mailboxes, you can have it do, previews and sound and show on the lock screen or not on the lock screen, show in your lock screen history or not in the history. But then you get to also choose whether you get notifications for your VIPs and also whether you get notifications on Threads. None of these are talking about different mailboxes, though, and that's the interesting part. I'm not sure I've ever seen iOS notify me of this, but I do know, especially when Bill says that a lot of times he doesn't get the notification until he launches mail, that makes me wonder how mail is being checked for on these devices, because with, well, low power mode, for one, mail won't check in the background. It'll only check when you launch the app. So, and I like my kids and most of my kids' friends just live in like permanent low power mode. As soon as they take their phone off charge in the morning, they just put it in low power mode and it stays that way all day. So it's possible that Bill's doing that and maybe that's causing these delays. The other thing would be going into settings, mail, and then going into, it's not settings. It's not there anymore. Sorry. It's settings, accounts, and passwords, and going in there and setting for each account. When you dig in, you get to set how often it's checking for your mail. And if you've got an option, you can have it do push. Like for mine, it's right at the bottom. If you go into settings, accounts, and passwords, at the bottom of that is an option that says fetch new data, and you can set that to hourly or push, and you can change it for all of your mailboxes, all of your mail accounts. That might be another place to check. Any thoughts on this, John?
Yeah, and I think also, here's the one thought. I think observation is that I think the default behavior, I'm set up just the way I want to be because I don't suffer from too many or too few. The way I'm set up, Dave, is actually, I was in the same place you were recently. Notifications, mail, and I find what works for me is VIP. That's the only thing I get a mail notification for. Because
right.
If it's not a VIP, then do I care?
Yeah, that's how I have mindset.
Or should you interrupt? I don't want you to interrupt me unless it's a VIP, in which case I figure it's an important email. You know,
right.
You're on the list and, you know, a few other people.
Right. Yeah. Nope. I run my mail notifications the same way. VIP is fantastic because, it, like you said, it lets you pick. And it's very easy to add people or remove people from the VIP list. But yeah,
that I still scratch my head over the mechanism for that and that it's not at all straightforward.
Really?
Well, I think
on the Mac, you just right click on a person's name and email and say add to VIP. And the same thing is true on iOS, right? You just inside a message, you just tap on their name in the from list and say add to VIP. It's right there.
Yeah. What bothers me is that seems to be the only venue. And that I don't think you can do it from the person's contact card, which would kind of make sense to me that you could identify someone as a
VIP. Here's the thing. Now, sorry, Bill, John has brought us down this tangent, but it's a good tangent. No, a VIP tangent's a good one. The reason you wouldn't want to do that from the contacts record is because you don't necessarily have contact records for every person or entity from whom you are receiving mail, and you want to be able to add them as a VIP, right? So you might, but there's no rule that says you have to have a contact record for someone in order to make them a VIP. So this is a mail function, not an iOS iOS-wide function.
Yeah. Well, I think it'll show you their contact card from that same
Sure.
down. You can identify somebody as a VIP, un-VIP them, or see their card.
If they have a contact card. If they don't.
So maybe it gives you a create.
You can create a contact card from there. Yeah. Like, I get email from, we have season tickets to the UNH hockey games. And they send out an email to us season ticket holders the day before the game. And those were getting lost in the shuffle. So I was always missing these things. They're like, oh, bring a can to the food drive and you can get a scarf or whatever. We missed out on scarves. And we also missed out on, you know, contributing to this food drive that they were doing because it only happened during that game. And so I can just go and say, add this address from UNH to my VIP. But it's not, there's no contact record for it. It's just a VIP. That's it. So, yeah, that's where it goes. The VIP tangent. It's good. You got any thoughts for Bill as to how, like, what I'm curious about is how do you get notifications for sub mailboxes? Like, let's say I wanted to have, we have server side rules, or at least I do, server side rules that put my Mac Geekab mail into, you know, one for general feedback and one for premium feedback. Mm-hmm. I can't get I don't get notifications for those. I imagine. Yeah, I don't know how I could. I didn't realize it was possible for iOS to notify me about anything other than that which landed in my inbox, even for VIPs. If I get a VIP note that is filtered to some other box, I don't get a notification for it. So how is Bill doing that is the question. Makes me feel like his iPad has some, I'll call it corrupt setting, but you know, in this case, it's kind of pretty cool. So yeah, I don't know. If anybody knows, let us know. We already told you how to find us. I got a note from EO Lake this week, longtime listener, longtime reader of, TMO.
Hold on. I just want to tell you this one thing.
Okay.
You may be able to make a rule that will send you a notification, Dave. I'm just looking in my list of rules here, at least on Mac OS.
Oh, yeah, on Mac OS.
There's a send notification action that you can take based on whatever condition you have in the rule.
So yes.
Just thought I'd offer that to you. Yeah, no. Scratching your head over, how could I possibly generate a notification?
Yeah, but I can't do that on iOS. Oh, Pete, right. We left my phone in volume on mode.
Yeah,
we're
that
messing
was me.
With that
sorry,
cool
man.
Cool stuff out. No, it's fine.
I goobered it.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, there's no way to do that. There's no way to do local rules in mail for iOS, right? So, yeah. All right, we'll go to EO Lake, because EO Lake wrote in this week. He said, just recently, my iPad, when sending photos to Facebook, makes them quite small, about 1 megapixel. I can't find a setting to change that, and a Google search only turns up information about HEIF, which is not the issue. How can I change this? Well, I knew that I had set my iPhone and iPad to upload high-res both photos and videos to Facebook a long time ago. So I went to look at that setting. And so I went into settings and then I went into Facebook. And sure enough, in my Facebook settings page, I have a setting to upload video HD and also photos HD. And they were both off for me. I don't know why that would have happened, because I know I had turned them on before. And it seems like that same thing happened to EO Lake too. So if you want to make sure you are uploading in HD or not in uploading in HD, whatever your choice is, I highly recommend you go to settings Facebook on your iPhone and iPads, because otherwise you may not have the setting you think you have. So thanks for the heads up on that. The unintentional heads up on that, EO Lake. It's good stuff, man.
Maybe changing the phones or something did it. I mean,
it could be,
you know, as you know, yeah. As soon as you change phones, all these settings go away that,
if they shouldn't,
you
like
think
that.
They would transition
right.
over, yeah.
Right.
And they just don't.
And they just
yeah.
don't. You know, no, I bet you're right.
So many logins. And
yep.
Don't let yourself commit a photo crime.
Right. That's, well, I mean, but anybody that posts to Instagram is automatically committing photo crimes every
time.
Hey,
no politics here, John.
What?
That's right.
Photo crimes? Never mind.
That's right. That's right. VI is better than Emacs, guys. I just want to make sure you know that.
Oh, there's photos of all sorts. I'm talking a... You know what I'm talking
right,
about.
Right, right.
Resolution.
But I'm with crime. You. The Instagram. Yes. I love Instagram because you can geotag things and all that. But I don't like that they reduce the quality of the picture more often than not.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, well.
All right. Bobby has actually a great question that I have sort of an answer for and would love help with this from all of you, too. Bobby says, can you please remind us where you purchased your AppleCare for your Macs from? There are two places that I have generally bought AppleCare from over the years. The first is LA Computer at lacomputercompany.com. And the other is Small Dog. Unfortunately, LA Computer's selection of AppleCare has been dwindling as of late. In fact, when I checked just the other day while we were prepping the show, the only thing they had left was iMac. Now, of course, you can buy AppleCare from Apple, but an AppleCare for an iMac costs you $169 from Apple. And from LA Computer Company, it is, well, see, now they don't even have that. Now they've got AppleCare for Mac Mini, but it was $129 from them. So a significant savings. For the Mac Mini, Apple charges $99. They charge $75. So there's significant savings from these guys, and they used to have everything in their list. Now it's like, you know, like I said, just one thing at a time. So I don't know if that's a temporary issue or if that's, you know, just a function of the way that particular aftermarket works. Small Dog is the other place that I have bought discounted AppleCare from over the years. At the moment, they are not offering discounts on any AppleCare. They do sell AppleCare, but you get a discount. We were talking about this pre-show as we were kind of doing our prep, and we do stream our pre-show at macgeekab.com/stream if you want to hear that. Alex in the chat room asked, well, I don't understand this. You know, if the warranty is coming from Apple, how can I buy AppleCare from a third party? And it's a great question that's really only answerable if you've done it. There's two ways that you can get AppleCare. One is sort of the digital download, I'll call it, but it's not even a download. You just go onto Apple's site, you plug your serial number in, you plug your credit card information in, you process the order for AppleCare, and it is immediately applied to your serial number. Do not pass go, do not collect $200, just pay the $200 or more, and you're good to go. The other way is to buy a boxed copy of AppleCare, and that's what you're buying from these third parties. In the box, it used to be a copy of Tech Tool Pro. I don't know if Tech Tool Pro still comes with AppleCare, but also in the box is a valuable piece of paper with a number on it. And you type that number in at Apple's AppleCare registration page. You assign it to your serial number, and then everything is good to go. So that's how you buy AppleCare from a third party. AppleCare is a warranty, and Alex is saying, clarifying his question, he's like, how can these people afford to sell it for less? AppleCare is, you know, for the most part, all profit for Apple, as any extended warranty really is. They're going to be supporting new computers anyway. It generally doesn't cost them a whole lot more to let other people use that support staff. Yes, there are some parts and hardware that they wind up using that they cover the cost for with AppleCare. So there's some cost delta, but it's not it's you know, mostly profit. So it is possible to find bulk AppleCare packages being sold for less than retail. And that's what these guys are doing. It's a little bit of arbitrage, right? They go out, they buy these things up in bulk. That stuff's available all over the place. You could buy bulk. Apple, I mean, you'd have to get on the bid list for them, but Apple will sell you, you know, iPhone, like, you know, a batch of iPhones. You know, here's $250,000 worth of iPhones. Buy them. They're not new. Some of them have problems. Some of them don't. It's up to you. You figure it out, and you're getting them at pennies on the dollar, right? And there's a whole business for this. So that's what's happening here is people are just buying up these bulk AppleCare things and then selling them off at a little profit. So, you know, presumably if LA Computer's got AppleCare for $75, they're paying maybe $65 for it, or maybe they're even paying, you know, $50 for it. Like it costs $99. Maybe it's possible to buy them in bulk for half price, and then they'd mark it up and split the difference, and you save and they make money. And that's how business works.
I've also seen it on eBay and Amazon. but the caution there is obviously, particularly like with eBay, be careful you don't buy the right to, you know, the right to look at a website that might have a chance to bid on an auction for AppleCare, you know, or, you know, every now and then you see weird stuff like that. I mean, my son went on to send buy you something once in it.
Or they send you a picture of the
Something real, you know. Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing wrong with a picture of the code.
Yeah,
I mean, I've done that with LA Computer. Close on the timing with one.
Right.
And Apple's actually very good about that. If you, like, let's say your warranty is going to expire on Wednesday, you know, your first year, and you have to register your AppleCare before your year's up, you can, if you buy on Monday but don't get the code in the mail until Friday, you have to sort of go through an exception process with Apple and talk with a rep. But if you show them your receipt, you're like, look, no, I paid for this on Monday before my warranty expired. They'll honor that every time.
Yeah.
And it could even be 3 weeks from Monday that you do it, and they'll honor it for you. They're very good about that. But so I've had them send me pictures when it's like, oh, crap, I'm, you know,
I need it now.
And they're like, okay, we'll open the box for you. And, you know,
I'm just saying, be careful on, you know, as you know, with eBay, you can get weird things.
It's not
even a picture of a code. Yeah, you know, you're paying $80 for the right to bid in the auction on, you know, no, wait a minute. I want the AppleCare itself. But it is on there if you put it in specifically. Amazon as well. But yeah, Small Dog seems to be the way to. The simplest way to go.
Unfortunately, but their prices are flat retail right now. So if you're going to pay flat retail, by all means, buy it from Apple. There's no, because that way Apple has a record of it. There's no question.
And it logs in right away.
Yep. Right away.
It's in your support page.
Yeah. So, and Alex actually has a great thing that, man, I always forget about. He says it might be worth mentioning if an Apple device was purchased with your credit card might cover accidental damage, something AppleCare does not cover. And your credit card might also extend your warranty by, you know, might double your warranty, depending. You've got to look at.
Especially when you're in the platinum cards. And
yeah,
stuff
right.
Like that,
it depends on the features of your card. Yeah. Yeah. Most of them do. And a lot of cards, especially this time of year, offer price protection. Sometimes it's, you know, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. If you buy something and then realize that it, you know, the price dropped, you know, in the post Christmas sales or whatever, even sometime in January, you might be able to recapture some of that. So, yeah, it's always good to remember the benefits of your credit cards that you use.
And then there's AppleCare versus AppleCare Plus on accidental damage. You were going to talk about that.
It's true, right? Yeah. Because, yes, we talk about AppleCare for our Macs, and that's, in fact, what's offered for our Macs. There is a completely different product with a very similar name offered for your iPhone called AppleCare Plus. And AppleCare Plus does indeed cover some level of accidental damage. With some limitations. So, right, John, do you buy AppleCare Plus for your iPhone?
I should have, but I didn't.
Okay.
Go.
Yeah. I buy AppleCare for all of my Macs, like without question. And it has saved me on, like, I'm way ahead of the game on this. That said, I've never bought AppleCare for any of my iPhones.
See, I'm kind of the opposite. Anything that I can move around with, my laptop, my phone, my iMac, I don't care.
It's really cost, comparing the cost of the phone versus the cost of AppleCare insurance it's exorbitant. The percentage of it.
Yeah.
It's really high. And, you know, I've always got, you know, whatever, four phones going.
Yeah.
And over
That's
the
true.
Years.
It's what? It's 20% of the price of the phone.
It's 20%. Yeah. So with four phones, you know, I'm at 80% of the price of a new phone. At any given time, and the math has worked out for me. We've had a couple of instances of issues, as you do, and we pay for it, you know, out of our pocket, whatever that repair is. Because remember, if you're paying $200 for, you know, for AppleCare Plus, to repair your phone doesn't cost you the full price of the phone.
Right. Cost of a new screen, $200.
It cost you a new screen.
But,
so,
you know,
yeah, here's $200. Well, that's would you like to pay that when your screen breaks? Or would you like to pay it when you buy the phone, whether or not your screen ever breaks? That's how math has worked out for us. We're way ahead on that. So, but we're also comfortable with that risk and the timing surprise of that particular expense.
Maybe I should get a refund then. I haven't activated it.
There you go. Yeah. If you're willing to,
I hadn't thought of it
spend $200 you know, like, hey, Dad, it's time. Okay, then you might be able to save it.
Sure. I don't know.
That's been my logic, and that logic has worked out for us.
Yeah.
So
it's always worked out well for me on the laptop.
Yeah.
Especially that's the one that I've done the best with, because, well, and you need it less, obviously, but some of us do need some real tech support now.
Yes.
That, no. You know, and you can pick up the phone and talk to them, and they'll talk to you. Hey, you know, how come this isn't working the way you advertised it?
And I've also found that AppleCare, like my Mac has, I mean, it's less and less moving parts over the years,
sure.
But things go wrong with my Mac hardware far more frequently than just having some like non-accidental issue happen to my iPhone. You have the batteries or whatever. Okay, fine. But other than that, there's nothing in the iPhones that in a general sense just dies.
Right.
So,
and even that technology, the battery in particular has gotten significantly better, it seems, over the years. They're having less and less battery issues that.
Yeah.
In my experience, my personal anecdotal experience.
Right. Yeah. That's all we can do is talk about anecdotal. Yeah. John, go ahead.
Now, this, you know, I think per your line of reasoning, I'm looking here right now. So the thing is, I got a broken screen and I'll have to get it fixed. If I go to Apple, it's $149 if it's out of warranty.
Okay.
The thing that baffles me is, so I look here. So AppleCare Plus for the iPhone 7 is $129.
Yep.
And then to get a repair done is $29. So it actually would cost me more to get my screen fixed if I bought AppleCare.
Well, if it's only your screen.
And you get two shots at it. You can go break the screen again and they'll fix it again for another $29.
But here's the other thing. Like when my son broke his screen, we brought it in. I forget. It was a 6. I think it was an iPhone 6. We brought it in. They're like, yeah, it's going to be whatever, $129, $149 for the new screen. It'll take us whatever, you know, 30 minutes to do it. We're like, awesome. Okay. We'll, you know, go and like mess around, whatever. We'll be right back. So we come back and they're like, yeah, so here's the thing. It's not just the screen, you know, whatever impact damage happened made it so that the motherboard is flaky enough that we can't get a new screen to be, you know, accepted by this motherboard. And they're like, and they even warned us about that up front. They're like, sometimes this happens. We don't know, as you can't. And, you know, you can only know if one part is truly the only thing wrong with the phone if you replace it and it works.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's just how that's simple troubleshooting, right? You isolate and move along. So the repair went from being $149 to $299 that day for that particular phone, whatever, you know, whatever it was at that point in time, because they're like, we're just going to have to do an out of warranty replacement of your phone. And now that's still
that's way cheaper than a new phone,
than buying a new phone.
Yeah.
Now you can't do an upgrade at that point. Like you can't say, well, I only got it with, you know, 64. Can I go to 128? No, it's exactly the same thing, but you're paying, you know, whatever, $299. So, and that's the worst of it that's happened for us.
And often they'll just bring out a new phone.
It was a brand new phone.
Yeah. See.
Yeah.
And that's it. And now that you mentioned that, every now and then you will get lucky. We had one for my daughter and it was a 32 gig. They didn't have any 32 gigs. They went, here's a 64, go away.
Oh, so you can get an upgrade, but it's not your choice.
It has to be. They just don't have any other product to give you.
Yeah, of course. So
now, to wrap up the AppleCare discussion, or I'll just give you another observation.
Dude. When we wrap up AppleCare, we got to wrap up the show. We're rambling.
But Alex made a good suggestion. Fine. Alex made another good suggestion. So the thing is, I just went to mine, Dave. So one thing, you may or may not know this, but Google knows where you are. How do you know this? Well, I'm going to tell you. So if I go to Google and I scroll to the bottom of the page, it says, oh, you're in this zip code in Fairfield, Connecticut.
Right.
Because it looks at my internet address and takes a guess. As far as I know, when you search for things, like shopping things, it'll use your location to tell you things that are nearby. Because I looked here, Dave. So I got one match, AppleCare for Mac Mini. So I searched for AppleCare Mac Mini. So it came up with B&H Photo has it for $99. Well, that's the retail.
Right, sure. But
Adorama Camera, which I believe is another retail outlet in Manhattan, has it for $69. So that's cool. And the initial is here. Boston College Bookstore has it for $79. There's one on eBay for $60. So just a Google search, letting it know your location may give you some viable options.
Yeah, man.
Google Food.
I bought stuff from Adorama.
Yeah, I've bought photo stuff and picture frames and all that from them. But
all right. Well, I am putting a link to their AppleCare page there. They don't have them for everything, but you're right. And they've got them for Mac Mini, which is ironically, or perhaps not coincidentally, the same product that LA Computer has. And they list it at Adorama as a closeout. So they might not be able to get any more of these. This might be a dying beast, which is unfortunate. But we'll put a link to their AppleCare page. That's great. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's time to bring the band in, guys.
Well.
It's kind of how it goes. I do want to take a minute. Actually, I want to say two things. I said this in the chat room, but I want to say it to all of you. Thank you. Thank you for everything. We say that all the time, but it really, we mean it every time we say it. Today we had four sponsors in the show, which is great. But that is our maximum. If somebody were to show up and say, no, we definitely want to be in this episode, I would not allow five. That's to me, that's too much. And I really do. You might be able to hear some of the difference in the sort of the timbre of the microphone and the levels, but I generally pre-record all the sponsor spots so that I can keep them tight. By pre-recording, it still happens as though it's live. We just play them back in the course of the show is how that works. But by doing them pre-recorded, I can read the talking points or whatever it is they want me to talk about. And then I can record it. And believe it or not, I actually edit my recordings of those to keep them tight, to keep the message on point, but also not ramble on for, 5-6 minutes per sponsor. So even with that, I try to balance it out. So I think this week we have four. Next week, at the moment, we have two. Normally, I would have taken one from this week and moved it to next week and balanced it 3 and 3 just to keep it that way for you. Scheduling wise, in terms of what the sponsors were expecting and needed, that wasn't an option for me this week. So we had four, which is fine. Again, that's the limit. But I just wanted to thank you for your patience with that. Hopefully the messages are delivered in such a way that you find some value out of them. It is, as I always say it, it's up to us to get you to look and be interested in the sponsor's product. It's up to them to sell it to you. We do not get a commission on the sales of the products. They pay us a flat rate, and we just we tell you about what we can with their stuff. We would love it if you visited our sponsors to learn more about it. Whether or not you buy, that's between you and them, frankly, and whatever works for you. But MacGeekGab.com/sponsors is where you can always see. So if you've got some time and you want to, see some, we try to make sure there's good deals and stuff, but it really does help us out if you go and visit them. So there you go. That's that. I just wanted to make sure everybody had heard that. And then I do want to take that minute that I always take and thank everybody who sent in premium contributions this week. We had a bunch of renewals. In fact, we had some of you who had to convert over from the old credit card system to the new one. Thank you for doing that. I know it's a little bit of a pain. I know it's not too bad, but it's not easy. It's not just automatic is what it is, and I appreciate it. So on the monthly $10 plan, we have Jim E., Greg S., Elizabeth K., Ward J., Chris F., Petter H., Bob P., Jason A., Michael L., and David B. And then on the biannual $25 plan, we have James B., Jeff K., and Putch. Thanks so much to all of you. Really, it means a lot. I think we told you how to contact us. You can find us on Facebook if you want to join the Mac Geek Gab group there. That's MacGeekGab.com/Facebook. We'll get you there. I want to thank Cashfly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you.
Don't forget, Dave.
What won't I forget?
224-888-GEEK,
which is 4335. That's right, man. Yep. Of course, I do want to thank our sponsors for this episode one more time, which is Casper.com/MGG, Harry's.com/MGG, Plex.tv/MacGeek, and TextExpander.com/podcast. course, our ongoing sponsors include them and Otherworld Computing at MaxSales.com and Barebones Software, all through the Backbeat Media Podcast Network.
Hey, I got something I wanted to tell you guys. I'm going to be gone this week, but while I'm out, I wanted to tell you to be careful and don't get caught.
Made up.